Hi, friends! Join us as we dive into the themes, metaphors, and foreshadowing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We are your hosts, Leah,
Sarah,
Tabby,
and whether you're a new viewer or a longtime fan, welcome to Becoming Buffy.
Hi guys, welcome back to Becoming Buffy, our Scooby's Secrets. Today we are talking about spoilers for The Real Me, or I guess I should just say Real Me. I keep wanting to say The Real Me. It's Real Me. And we have Leah with us, which I'm really happy about because we didn't have her for our spoiler-free episode. So now we get to hear all her thoughts, but unfiltered from the get-go. So Leah, what'd you think of the episode? And hold the mic closer to your face, please.
Sorry. I did not know I was going to be put on the spot like this. I'm trying to remember what happened in the episode now. I'm like, I did like this episode. The interesting thing about Dawn is that Dawn always splits my, like I always am 50-50 with Dawn, where I 50-50, like I 50% really resonate with Dawn. I'm the youngest of, you know, five other siblings. And so it's like, I get that feeling of being the youngest and you're always left out of the adult stuff and everyone is always older than you and seems to think that they know better. And like, you know, I get that. And like when everyone else is like moving on with your life, you're still like going through puberty. Like, I really resonate with that side of Dawn. And so I feel like there's a part of me that is kind of that is easier on Dawn because I understand where her emotions come from. But then there's also another part of me that really resonates with like Buffy because oh my God, because I had so many sisters, I felt like nothing was ever my own. So it's like anytime I had friends, they had to be me and my sister's friends. Or anytime I had a birthday, it was like me and Tabby shared a birthday. Like, mm-hmm. Or anytime like, so it was just like, there was just nothing that was ever my own. And or it's like, oh, I'm going to go do this. And my mom would be like, oh, well, you can go with, you know, whoever. And so I sometimes really hate Dawn and but overall I love her. But I always forget how much Dawn brings such a real side of Buffy out. And it's such a side that you never knew you needed until you watched season 5 and you just see the way that Buffy loves Dawn. And I think it's something that you could really only ever understand if you've had sisters or siblings, because it's just like the type of person, like all those quotes where it's like, I would never let my sister wear my jacket, but I would kill for her. Like mm-hmm. those types of things. Like that's what I think of when I see Buffy and Dawn. And so I kind of miss their dynamic when we were watching the first few seasons. I feel like just Joyce and Buffy, it doesn't feel complete, which is so funny because I remember when I first met Dawn, I was like, oh, like, no, it's always going to be Joyce and Buffy. But once Dawn is in the picture, it honestly doesn't feel whole when she's not there. And I like that we got an episode that was so catered to Dawn. And I love the, you know, kind of the direction they took where it's fully voiced by Dawn. You're hearing her in her monologue. She's kind of an unreliable narrator. And I just found it, I thought it was cute. I thought it was well done and kind of makes the audience think that Dawn knows what she is when she doesn't. Because I remember when I first watched this season, I thought Dawn was kind of like a spy. Like she knew that, or like
evil.
Yeah. I didn't know if she, I didn't think she was evil. I thought it was more of like maybe she had information that Buffy didn't, more so. It's just so interesting watching this episode because, you know, you have no idea where this season is gonna go, honestly. But
we talked about the non-spoiler section, Leah, just how like rare of a show that Buffy is, that in season 5 you get to see a whole different side of Buffy that you've never seen before. Like, how rare is it that they can, like, still by season 5, I'm realizing facets about our main character that, like, have never been there before in a fluid way. Like having Dawn come in feels like it doesn't feel natural in the beginning because you're like, what the? You're like questioning, you're like, am I being gaslit this whole time? But then when you find out why, you're like, oh, that's so genius. And it Buffy being an older sister all of a sudden just clicks in. Like it just feels like it fits her character to be an older sister, just because she's always been a protector. And I just, the season 5 arc of Buffy is really beautiful. So I'm really excited to see how Dawn affects that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question for you guys. Why do you guys think Dawn is hated so much? Because in contrast, I know people hate on Connor over on Angel, but I get the feeling that people hate on and blame the writers more than they blame Connor himself for what happens in season 4, just because he's one facet of like a really crappy season. But Dawn is one of those characters that the audiences never really resonated with, which is interesting. I see her on so many lists for top most annoying and hated characters on any TV show ever. It's usually Dawn. And I'm curious why you guys think that is.
Honestly, I'm such a Dawn apologist. Mm-hmm. Like, only because I think it's the same idea of like when people get older, they're like, oh, kids are so annoying. And it's like, yes, they are. This is coming from someone who literally just came back from a 6-hour field trip with a bunch of kids to the zoo. Kids are annoying. Okay. However, you were annoying when you were a kid. And I think that it takes a self-reflective person, not that I'm super self-reflective, but like it takes a self-reflective person to go, you know what? I was annoying as a kid and someone had the kindness to deal with me. And I want to be that person for someone else, some annoying kid. Because mm-hmm. I think of how annoying I was as a kid. And I'm like, oh my God, how did people not tell me to shut up all the time? And they were nice to me and they didn't. Some people did, and that was valid. But like, and so I think when I see Dawn, I just see me, which people are like, oh, yeah, we know, Leah. But like, I see Dawn and I see a annoying teenage girl who's dealing with so much and like just wants attention, which is so normal. And I think that people don't like Dawn because deep inside they kind of resonate with Dawn. That's my little hypothesis, yeah. Is that people don't like to see annoying kids because they like to pretend that they weren't one.
I view it as the Jurassic Park effect. If you look at the first Jurassic Park, there are two kids in it. And one of them is a lot more palatable than the other. Although I don't think the girl's that annoying. But like when you look at it, people are like, oh my gosh, Timmy's the best or whatever. Because he just like they go through the same amount of trauma. And then one of them is a lot more outspokenly scared and the other one just kind of bears it better. But it's like, why are we like, as people who are watching this, I'm like, we're criticizing children's like trauma responses when they're literally children. We're like, oh my God, I forget what the girl's name is, but her like Lexi. Screaming all the time. Yeah. Her screaming all the time. People are like, oh, that's so annoying. I'm like, if I was being crushed under glass by a T-Rex with my brother, I'd be screaming too. But like Timmy's just younger and a lot more timid. So he's not going to be like as outwardly quote unquote annoying, but Dawn goes through like similar traumas and or all of her friends and family members dying, not just strangers. Like they just witnessed strangers dying, but like everyone they care for survived. And yet everyone's like, Dawn's really annoying. I'm like, oh my God. I think we just kind of forget there's a difference between like annoying television wise and then annoying realistically. And I think Dawn is annoying realistically. And so that really pisses us off because we're like, oh, it's a little too triggering. But I love that. I love that it's very real. Like her and Buffy's relationship isn't like a television siblings spats. It's like, oh, no, this is like really real. Like even the episode when she's like, we talked about this in the non-spoiler, when she's like using up all of her milk. And she doesn't say a single word. I wanted to punch her. But I was like, that's such a younger sibling thing. I used to write my name on all of the food I bought. And I'd be like, Leah, don't eat.
Yeah. She puts the milk back in the exact spot that Buffy put it. Because you know that if she moved it, Buffy would have called her out. And it would have been Dawn's fault. But putting it back meant that she could almost say
deniability.
Exactly.
Yep. And the funny thing is, Buffy like pours it and then immediately side eyes Dawn because she knew she knows that Dawn took but that Dawn last bit. But Dawn
doesn't say anything. It kills me.
Dawn is Joyce's little pumpkin belly. She can do no wrong in Joyce's eyes. So it's just like, why say anything at all?
And I mean, not to get too far off of the Buffy Dawn track and stuff, but I hypothesize that people don't like Dawn very much. And it kind of speaks to what you were saying about Lexi in Jurassic Park, Tabby. But we live in a society that doesn't really like children. We live in a society that really struggles to see children as more than an inconvenience and a burden. And this is something I've actually seen a lot of, like, articles and doctors and even some like TikTokers talking about, which I know that doesn't make me sound all that scientific, but it is interesting to hear people speaking on this phenomena and talking about how, and Chrissy can talk about this as someone who has kids, when you have kids, it gets really hard to find support in a society and to take your kids to a lot of places because it's not really child friendly. It's so hard. I mean, people talk about hating kids coming on planes because they're like, oh no, they're going to scream and cry the entire time.
I always see that and it pisses me off because I always think about that time when me and Sarah flew with Gwen and Sawyer when they were younger. And it was like, we were taking turns because our other sister was taking a nap in the other chair, but we were taking turns with the kids, and then Sawyer had like a blowout.
It wasn't me. Gwen She's not was talking whining. About me. I have to specify that. Please, it was not me on the plane.
We know it's you, girl.
I remember sitting there and just being like, I can't even imagine what this is like if it was just Sarah on the plane. And I remember thinking that because I just remember being like, okay, I'll take care of Gwen and Sarah, you go take care of the diaper. And like, and it was like, we would just take turns. And I just remember thinking like, oh my gosh, like this is so hard. And like, I'm trying my hardest and I'm trying to be considerate. And I was never rude to like moms before, but it was like being in that position. Yeah, being in that position, like even now, like when I see moms, I'm like, there's like a voice in me that wants to be like, do you need help? I'm like, they probably will think I'm psycho, but like, I just am like, oh.
Better coming from a girl, though.
I think with Dawn, like, you know, the hatred towards her, and then, you know, you saying like, we don't really have a society that's like tolerable towards children. Like, a lot of people view children as an inconvenience. And I think the fandom views Dawn, just like a lot of people view children, as an inconvenience.
Yes.
Because children do things that are very inconvenient and they add a lot of stress and anxiety to situations. And what does Dawn do? She brings out a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety, and she's constantly just like, like Dark Willow said, like, Mom, tell Buffy. Like, she's always whining. And so she does a lot of things that are inconvenient. And I think that's where a lot of her
or constantly having to be saved too, putting yourself in situations that
she don't really need dangerous. To be in. Yeah.
And she's too young to sexualize. So what is the point of her being on screen?
Sarah.
Good point.
She's useless.
Dang, snaps.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people see her and they're like, okay, well, if there's a character that's annoying, well, I can no still one, like her.
No one dislikes her in season 7. That's all I'm going to say.
Ooh, girl.
Okay, but also her character does grow a lot in season 7. So that's
yes,
a
but
little
she's
different.
Also like clearly a woman in season
she's
7.
Hotter.
She's beautiful. Yes.
She's not dressed as like a child with a little cat on her shirt. Like you can tell she's a woman.
And she has continual trauma in season 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really funny because I was actually thinking about that when we watched the episode about how much Michelle Trachtenberg grows in the 3 seasons that she's on the show, because she looks like a bitty baby and she's shorter than Sarah Michelle Gellar here and she's taller than her by the end of the series, which is just crazy. So, okay. Like small little fact about Dawn. The character of Dawn was originally intended to have superpowers. She was supposed to be able to speak to the dead or to be able to move objects with her mind. Could you guys imagine?
I prefer the dead one. Moving objects with your mind, it changes it into a whole like mutant X-Men territory, and then it doesn't work. Like, that doesn't work in the lore of Buffy.
Yeah. I think they took the whole speaking to the dead and brought that over to conversations with dead people.
Yeah.
When she's talking with Joyce, I think that's where they decided to bring. And they also were toying around with having her have powers in season 7. So I think that's kind of where that was going to go. And then they, you know, the whole idea of her possibly being a potential and stuff too, which but they decided to drop.
I like that she doesn't. Like, actually in season 7, potential is one of my favorite episodes.
I agree.
Think it's a beautiful episode of her just like – handing the power off willingly and humbly to Amanda, and then having that conversation with Xander as both people who feel like they have no quote unquote like specific role, but they're the people that see and are empathetic and observe and are there for people and are like the moral compass, you know?
That so, is such a good non-episode.
Why wouldn't call Xander the moral compass?
I'm not saying he is particularly, but like he is like an observer and he does like kind of probe a lot of conversations in later seasons of stuff they need to talk about. Do I think he's a completely agreeable in every conversation? No. But he does probe a lot of these conversations because he's very outspoken.
Yeah, which is funny that you bring that up, Tabby, because I was thinking about that today, but I was like, I just love that episode so much.
Yeah.
And I love that conversation between Dawn and Xander, and then Dawn like feeling like she's not seen and all that stuff is earned because it starts in this episode.
Yes.
And you see in this episode how Xander sees Dawn in a way that no one else does. He's able to see her as someone who is kind of like left behind in a lot of ways, and he doesn't treat her as lower or any different. And Leah and I were talking about how I think Dawn and Xander's relationship in the series is really beautiful and is one of the better dynamics that we see.
And
then we're talking about
creepy.
And then the comics made it so freaking weird.
No, it makes it because Dawn was actually one of the redeeming parts of Xander's character.
Yes.
She brought out a very tender, selfless,
brotherly
side of Xander. Xander got nothing out of babysitting Dawn, being nice to Dawn. Honestly, it's kind of surprising that he didn't often side with Buffy against Dawn, because it would get on Buffy's good side, you know, because not a lot of people were siding her when it comes to Dawn. But he doesn't, because, you know, he sticks up for Dawn. He likes Dawn and stuff. But then it makes it so freaking creepy. And then it's hard not to look at all these scenes through that lens.
Yeah. And that's why I cannot take the comics as canon, because it changes how you view a lot of the relationships in the show that are really good and pure. And then it changes. And it's just like, no, I can't. I can't do that.
We just pretend they don't exist over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. And it's not hard because I didn't see them and didn't read them, so.
Yeah. I just throw things against my will.
Ugh,
same. Yeah.
All right, so the music used for the scene in which Buffy is meditating at the very beginning of the episode is later used in several episodes, including Intervention, which is important because that is the episode where she talks to the spirit guide and begins to learn about the true nature of the Slayer. So I'll talk about this at the end of the episode, but kind of what we were talking about in the spoiler-free section when we were talking about how Dawn is the other side of Buffy, is a reflection of Buffy in this season. And this moment where Giles is literally telling Buffy, like, reach inside, find your center, find who you are, as we have that music. That's exactly what Buffy's going to do this season. That's her journey. And that moment in Intervention is her going to the spirit of the Slayer and trying to find like who she is at the core. So I think that's really cool that they have that audio link through the music. Another thing that we have in this episode is Anya. Xander teaches Anya the table game rules of cash equals good. She develops a passion for money and capitalism, which is a contrast to her past self in Selfless. We're finally going to have Anya do something this season, you guys. I'm really excited about that.
Except for making sarcastic comments.
Yeah, exactly. She's going to have something else, another layer added to her character, which will be great. Giles, this isn't necessarily like a correlation, but it's just something that popped into my head. When they find the shopkeeper dead in the magic box, you have Giles leaning down and closing the dead guy's eyes and then wiping his hand with the rag. And at the end of the season, he's going to kill Ben by suffocating him, and he will wipe his hands with and his glasses. And it's not necessarily a parallel or anything, but that imagery just popped in my head. And I'm really, really excited to talk about that moment because I think that's one of the most fascinating Giles moments. Okay, and then Spike. So we have Spike talking to Harmony and just like his entire conversation with her just kind of smacks of misogyny. He talks about he mocks Harmony for attempting to kill Buffy, saying, "Oh, that's my tune that I've been doing this entire time." But it's really interesting because this entire season, he's going to try to kill Buffy and he won't be able to. And Harmony's actually going to be like, "Spike, you can't do," like, she kind of comes back. And so like his words come back to bite him. And I think that's really interesting. There's just so much that they're leading into the season with just this one episode.
You can tell that Joss Whedon really came back with this season, was like, "All right, time to get this back on the train tracks there." Because you can see, I mean, hate him, but like, you can see that like, anytime I feel like, anytime I give him even like the smallest praise, I have to remind people, I'm like, no, he's a scumbag. I hate him. But you can just tell with this season, they learned from season four. Like, they were like, we need to know where we're going right off the bat. I mean, even the fact that Spike makes kind of that jab at Harmony where he's like, "Oh, you thought you were going to be the next big bad, blah, 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 blah." And it's like, it's kind of setting it up for the fact that in the past, it's always been the men that are the big bads.
That's what we said in the spoiler season. Yeah.
Was going to be a woman who was going to be a big bad. And in my opinion, was the scariest big bad of all of them. Like, she, I remember the first time I watched this season and they were getting so close to Glory, and I literally was like, I don't know how Buffy is going to defeat her. Like, I don't know how Buffy is going to fight this girl.
There's a genuine threat this season.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stakes.
Yeah. And I think this is the first season that felt like the stakes were both really big on a personal level and also in a cataclysmic, like, universe level, because technically Angelus was trying to end the world in season two, but it felt like the personal stakes overshadowed that. Like, a Cathla was just kind of like a secondary thing. In this one, you're genuinely like, oh my gosh, if Glory gets Dawn, she opens a portal to another universe and everybody gets sucked in. Like, it just felt so big in comparison to also like the personal stuff too. So I don't know why that is, but maybe we'll discover that as we continue on the season. Andrew, so crazy that Andrew is in this episode, technically as Cyrus, but Tom Link, he plays Cyrus the vampire, it's hilarious to me that he is Harmony's minion before he ever was Spike's or Warren's. So technically he was like three people's minion, which is hilarious.
He was really easy to pick out too. Like, wait a minute. After watching like the whole series through and then seeing him again, I was like, wait a minute, I know you.
Tara. So Tara had a couple of like small moments in this episode, but they were very pointed, where we can tell that they are leading up to family, where it's revealed that her family's been telling her that she is a half demon, which I was like, thank goodness, because there was like that one moment in season four where she like hijacked and then, like, radio silence.
We're like,
do the writers know that happened? Was that just, you know, the actress going rogue? Like,
they're,
what is
gaslighting
this?
Us.
Yeah. What I think is interesting though is that Dawn is struggling with who she is this season. So is Buffy, but so is Tara. And so like that idea of, you know, Buffy telling Dawn, "Hey, you have Summer's blood. You know, you're still a part of me," and everyone coming around Tara and saying, "Hey, we're your family now, no matter what is in your blood." I just like the different portrayals of family. And then even Dawn, Dawn even kind of symbolizes adoption, which I think is really beautiful too. So it's just great. And then last of all, which I think is really fascinating, I'm super excited to tell you guys and for us to talk about it this season. So there's that really important moment where Buffy's talking to Riley. She says, you know, Dawn gets to be a kid. She acts like it's the biggest burden in the world, when sometimes all I want to do is curl up in mom's lap and not worry about the fate of the world. I'd like to be the one who's all protected, who's waited on. And I contrast this moment with the gift, because this is what this is all leading up to, and how Buffy's frustrations with Dawn and her feelings in this episode change so drastically by the end of the season, how she chooses to sacrifice herself for her sister when Dawn could have done so. She talks about how annoying she is and how she's like in her way and all that stuff. And by the end of the season, Buffy, like Dawn could have jumped and the world would have been fine, but Buffy chooses to take that on herself. And then I think back to that speech that she gives Giles in The Gift when she talks about how everything has become so muddled, and she tears up and goes, I just wish my mom was here. And it reminds me of this moment when she talks about wanting to curl up on her mom's lap. And then I think about Surprise and Innocence when they end and she's laying on her mom's lap. Like, it just, it chokes me up each time. But like, that's what makes these moments so great, right? Is the symmetry between, and like the callbacks, because at the end of the day, and that's what The Gift tells us, she's just a girl. Like, we think of her as our Buffy, as this superhero who can do pretty much anything. But at the end of the day, she's just a girl. And I think that's so powerful. I also think about Forever, how she tells Dawn that she's scared because she has to be the adult, and how she's trying to be the strong one. Like, Buffy grows up so much this season. Like, it's just, I'm trying to soak in this episode and the next few episodes, because they're the last time we see happy, light Buffy for a long time. Yeah,
for a long, long time.
And it never, she never really comes back. Like season 7, she's a little bit lighter, but there's a
after season 4, she's just different. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Or just a calloused from wounds version of her. We have moments where she smiles and stuff, but it's never fully the pep in her step that we see in the first couple seasons.
Yeah, it's like you slowly see that light in her just diminish, like chip away slowly.
This episode also foreshadows The Gift tremendously in that Dawn gets kidnapped by a blonde woman who vents to her and threatens to kill her. And Harmony even tells Spike that Buffy would be dead by sunrise, which I don't know if you guys noticed that. That's like a little nod to The Gift. And then, okay, so this is from Mark Field, from Myth, Metaphor, and Morality. And he has a really interesting theory about Dawn's placement in this season. And I kind of hinted at it to you guys and gave you a little bit over in the spoiler-free section. But in this one, I'm going to kind of give it to you guys, the whole thing. And I think it's really cool because now we get to look for this as we're talking about each episode. So Mark Field says, we find out in The Gift that Buffy tells Giles that Buffy is Dawn. Dawn is Buffy. In The Real Me, the writers are hinting at this by bringing out Buffy's desire to have the innocence that Dawn experiences. He says, the part of Buffy that is Dawn is the childlike, vulnerable, and human part of her. The whole point of the season is that Buffy needs to learn to incorporate Dawn into her life. In Metaphor, she needs to find a way to preserve her childlike innocence as part of her adult persona. It's something Buffy learns gradually. At the beginning of the season, she almost resents Dawn's presence. She accepts her and family and takes responsibility for protecting her, starting in shadow and continuing through the rest of the season, even though she doesn't quite see Dawn as real. The uncertainty about Dawn's existence are because Buffy's not sure her human, innocent self still exists after all she's gone through as the Slayer. And that's why she tells Giles, I don't know if I know how to love anymore. Because she's like, I think that part of me is dead. And Dawn represents to her, she's not. And I think that, and that's going to be make for a really, this is just a side note, but that's going to make for a really interesting conversation in Conversations with Dead People when Giles brings up, would you still sacrifice yourself for Dawn or would you sacrifice Dawn? And she answers without hesitation that she would sacrifice Dawn. That makes for a really interesting commentary about her childlike innocence and stuff. But back to season 5. So the show is all about the journey of adolescence and becoming an adult. And season 5 is the season that Buffy truly becomes an adult. Dawn represents childhood. Glory, on the other side, I know we haven't met Glory yet, but I'm going to talk about Glory here. Glory is the other side of this. She's the antithesis of Dawn. So she's going to be a direct contrast. Dawn is going to be a direct contrast to Glory, who represents Buffy's Slayer side, or what Buffy fears her Slayer side will make her as an adult. Harsh, insane and super powered. Mark Field continues saying, insane because the harsh reality of adulthood is enough to make the whole prospect of adulthood seem crazy, which is why there's an emphasis throughout the season on the way Buffy and others act crazy. You have Glory taking people's minds. You have at one point Buffy goes comatose and Willow has to go in her mind to get her back, and Buffy's afraid that she's going to completely devolve. And then Mark Field references Riley's description of Super Buffy in The Replacement, saying that it would be pretty much unkillable. That's Glory. As is the case with Dawn, Glory isn't necessarily what Buffy Slayer half actually is, but what Buffy fears it could be. Glory and Dawn are the metaphorical two halves of Buffy. One side is how she sees herself. The other is her fear of what becoming an adult might make her. And a lot of like quotes talk about how Joss Whedon really viewed season five as the end of his arc of adolescence and like demons in adolescence. One, because he thought the show was ending, but two, because season six and seven are more about adulthood and less about adolescence. So when Buffy dies, it's a literal and a metaphysical or metaphorical death. Literally, she dies, but metaphorically, her childhood also kind of dies. But it doesn't mean the childlike part of her has to die either. And we'll talk about that season six. So in order to avoid becoming a hardened and ruthless killer, Buffy must preserve her inner child or humanity, which is why Dawn is the key. She is the key and the link to Buffy's humanity, which I think is just so cool, especially like when you think about where this whole show is going up to season seven, how Buffy still fights for her humanity up till the very end. So I don't know. I think that's really cool. And I'm going to watch the rest of season five through that lens because I can totally see it. And I'm really excited to just like pick up on all the little clues that they have to show us. So, and then the last thing is, so looking at all of this, looking at real me, knowing where we're going, we actually see that the episode is about Dawn, but it's also actually about Buffy. Dawn's writing in her diary could represent Buffy too. Nobody knows who Buffy is. Nobody asks what she wants to do with her life. And I think that is so cool.
I always liked the idea. I know we're not quite on Glory yet, but like having a villain be so obviously
a mirror pulling
at, yeah, like a pulling at parts of Buffy that are just like we haven't quite seen. I love when we can do that with big bads. Like Adam showed me nothing of Buffy. It showed me only freaking things about Riley. So I was so bored. I was like, right. Not only are you aesthetically gross and weird, but like you give me nothing. Not only is Glory like a slay, but like she is like such a fun villain, terrifying, and shows us sides of Buffy. Catherine and I watched Family together because she was going to come on for that. Yeah.
Does she want to do it?
2 nights ago? I think so. She okay. liked it. But she didn't know who Glory was. And then Glory popped up and she goes, who's that? And I goes, oh, that's Glory. She's a slay, huh? And then she goes, yeah, I really like her. I was like, yeah, she's a great villain. But I just, she's just so fun. Like she's just quintessential 2000s villain.
She's a camp villain through and through.
Yes, but she's like, I feel like the word camp to me means what you mean, Sarah, but I feel like a lot of people think it's like poor taste, but she just is great. Like when I say like something's camp, I just think it's like non-serious, but also serious, like at the same time. But like, like she just embodies it so well. Like she's fun and stylish and like – funny.
Crazy
and crazy, yes, crazy. And then, but yet, is genuinely terrifying and really strong. And I just think I just wish we had more of her. I really feel like she's underused a little bit.
She is. She's not in the season very much.
I know, and it kind of bums me out because every time she's on screen, I'm like, I love her.
She draws you in.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's so refreshing to have a female villain. I know we talked about this in the spoiler-free section. We're like, oh my gosh. We're like, what is it about the energy of this episode? We're like, is it Dawn? Is it – no, it's because the feminine energy.
But you know what I'm just thinking of? And this may be a leap and you can tell me to shut up. But like Glory kind of is like the real me as well, because no one knows who she really is. Is she Ben or is she Glory? Like, no one asked her what she wanted. Like, she got shoved inside of Ben's little baby body. Like,
I just
thought of that. That is really
right. Well, this whole season's about duality, the two sides of Buffy. So you have Ben and Glory representing her humanity versus the Slayer, like, or the villain, the god versus the human. Like, it's all going to be about duality. So it's going to be really interesting.
And you know what? This whole season is female energy and female empowerment. And then we have freaking season 6 right after that, which is just toxic masculinity at its core. Which is done on purpose. It's done on purpose. Don't get me wrong. But then you have like you said, we have abuse, is what Chrissy said, and then we have like resentment in relationships. We have relationships dying out. We have addiction. Yeah. We have like also just relationships that are just once good, now toxic, like Tara and Willow. Like, it's just, it's so sad. Like, there's just, it's like from that, like, bonds and friendship and family and femininity in season 5 and power and finding yourself, and then it's straight into season 6 and I'm like, oh my god.
Season 5 is the bright shining beacon sandwiched between two misogynistic seasons.
And then season 7 is not trying to be a lot of those things, but ends up kind of being in some smaller senses, but ends up kind of being like that, but then also having some great empowerment girl stuff that season 5 did really well, that season 7 did fine in some senses. And don't get me wrong, the last like two episodes of Buffy like really kind of pull it together, and the beginning half of season 7, but it loses me somewhere in there. But I don't know how I got on season 7, but anyway, season 5 slay.
Yeah. And there will be good stuff in season 7 too. Like, we talked about potential is super great. I know so many people hate it. I love Storyteller and I can't wait to tell you guys why it's so good. But yeah, there's
great episodes. I really like him in season 7. I love him.
You know what? I know that. I know it's so problematic, but I really like it too.
His physical essence has a penis. Like,
I can change that.
I can change that. I don't know. I just love that episode. I like it. It's like a callback to the earlier seasons, which I like more than.
It's the Bewitched of season 7.
Yeah.
It's trying to be what season 1, 2, and 3 were. And but you know what? I don't hate it for that.
When they're all adults, though. Like, my biggest thing was like, why are we going to have like Buffy and the adult girl swooning over a 17-year-old who's like,
oh, I agree. Young.
Like, that's the part of me.
Straddling him. Yeah. I was like that girl.
Yeah. And like, I obviously, like, she's under magic and all that stuff. So I don't blame her for it. It's just more of like, writers, can we make this a little bit less problematic? Like, well, I understand it's on purpose.
Yeah. The ending of it was so dark with Dawn like wanting to kill herself. I was like,
But that was kind of funny to me.
what? Explain yourself.
It's supposed to be like high school being like, I'm ready to kill myself and not be with them. But then you're going to have an adult.
It's giving Bella Swan. That's where we all can see Michelle Trachtenberg as Bella.
Exactly. It's very much like that. And it's supposed to be ridiculous in that sense. They know what they're doing. It's supposed to be like a dark humor-ish. But then when you have an adult straddling a 17-year-old, I'm like, okay.
And she's his guidance counselor too, which makes another layer of ick.
Is that a kink? Like, guys wanting to sleep with administrators.
Older women.
It's just kind of like.
And they do that multiple times in the show where they have the teacher-student relationship, and it's always a female teacher, and it's always like, okay, this is a fantasy. This is
like
a kink.
Like Xander and Miss French.
And again, it's all painted as bad, but it's like, okay, we can't keep getting away with this. Like, if you're going to keep saying this is bad, but I'm going to put it in. I'm like, babes, do you like this? Like, none of us want this.
No one asked for this in the suggestion box.
Once, fine, sure. But like 4 times, for real.
We're all side-eyeing Marty Noxon right now.
Look, we know she's a freak.
Waiting
she's
for Leah to come
gross.
Back on and talk about Marty.
Leah's like, she Marty Noxon? Marty,
she's like,
ears perk up, dog ears. Huh?
Guys, I try to refrain from talking about season 6 until we get there because I just won't stop talking.
She has a lot of thoughts.
No, and that's okay, Leah. That's okay. Save them because we can't give everything away. We've got to save some stuff for the peoples, you know?
I'm going to need more money compensation for season 6 and 7. So people, please, please sign on to buy me a coffee because I don't know how I'm going to get through season 6 and 7 without a little bribing.
Just slip I will Tabby want to quit. An extra 20 and just put it in a side note. Like, this is the for trauma Tabby's pain I go and through. Suffering. It's to pay for her therapy.
Okay, so that was the end of spoilers for Real Me. Thank you so much, Chrissy, for joining us again. This was so much fun.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, let us know if you want to come back for another one. We'll bring you on. Season 6. You want to come on for season 6?
I do. I would like to watch Buffy get smashed by Spike so I can pick it apart. I'm just joking.
We're just going to have like guests every single week so we can have some fun.
Yeah, we'll sign you up for, you know, all of the bad episodes
just
in season 6,
bad.
Chrissy. Yeah.
Just all the bad ones. I'll come.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, let us know your thoughts. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Tumblr at Becoming Buffy Podcast. And you can email us at becomingbuffypodcast@gmail.com. Special shout out and thank you to our producers, Kashan, CJ, Paul, and Chrissy. Thank you to our listeners, and we will talk to you all next time.